So we've talked about the history of money. We've talked about some of the innovations happening in the financial services industry right now. And it's time to move to the future. Where is money going? One type of money that we've mentioned a couple times, and I'm sure you've heard about, is Bitcoin, a completely different form of currency. Our next guest has written a book about Bitcoin movement and the changes it's starting to have on the financial system. Nathaniel Popper is a New York Times reporter and the author of Digital Gold, Bitcoin and the Inside Story of the Misfits and Millionaires Trying to Reinvent Money. Let's start by just explaining what the hell Bitcoin is. What is a Bitcoin? How did the concept originate? Just tell us a little bit about what it is.
You know, I like to think of it at the simplest level, in the way that the people involved in the projects that led to Bitcoin thought about it. And this was a lot of privacy activists back in the 90s and early 2000s. Who were essentially trying to create digital cash. They saw what cash could do in the physical world. You handed a $20 bill over, and you didn't need any middleman. And once you handed the money over, the transaction was over. And I think these privacy activists realized that when you moved into the digital realm, cash didn't make that transition. The goal was to create a kind of digital cash that had that simplicity of physical cash. You handed it over and it was done, and you didn't need anybody else involved in the transaction. It was a sort of altruistic project in some sense.
Well, so let's move to Silk Road and its role in the growth or whatever, the development of Bitcoin.
It's both hurt and helped Bitcoin. The Silk Road came about something like 2 years into Bitcoin's history. And at that point, people hadn't really figured out anything to do with these digital tokens. You know, there were a bunch of hackers and nerds sort of trading them around, sending them around, having fun with them. But, you know, and people started buying and selling them online, creating marketplaces for them. But, you know, 25, 50 cents maybe here and there, people would pay for them. Why would you pay for them? You couldn't do anything with them. But this kid from Texas, Ross Ulbricht, in his 20s, grad school dropout, put the Silk Road online, not under his own name, but under another pseudonym. And suddenly people said, wow, here's something that I can do with Bitcoin that I can't do with my credit card or PayPal. I can't pay a heroin dealer in Amsterdam with PayPal or Visa. The police will obviously immediately get those records from PayPal or Visa, and I'll be arrested. But with Bitcoin, I can send that money essentially anonymously across the world. And people started doing this, and there was some question about whether it would work, but it did. And suddenly there was something you could do with Bitcoin. And for the next year and a half, even 2 years, this was, I think, the main kind of actual transaction that was taking place with Bitcoin, and it was working as intended. And I think, obviously, that got a lot of attention for Bitcoin, a lot of negative attention. Law enforcement started looking at this. But it also drew a lot of new technologists to look at this and say, if you can use Bitcoin to pay for drugs from Amsterdam, maybe you could also use it. Maybe there are other good uses for it that aren't illegal. And so people really started thinking hard and looking at how this might move in other directions. And that was crucial as well.
The FBI seizes Ross Ulbricht's Bitcoins and at one point owns about 3% of the Bitcoins in circulation. Was that a net positive or negative for Bitcoin?
By the time Ross was arrested, people wanted to distance themselves from the Silk Road. And so his arrest and the fact that Bitcoin sort of sailed through that allowed people to make the argument that, you know what, the Silk Road wasn't the only thing keeping Bitcoin alive, and this is more than just an illegal illegal marketplace currency. So people celebrated his arrest. And then as you say, the government seized those Bitcoins and then auctioned them. So once the government auctioned the Bitcoins, I think people said, wow, you know, if the government sold Bitcoins, they're going to be unable to say that it's illegal for somebody else to sell Bitcoins. It kind of legitimated Bitcoin in many people's eyes.
In an odd way, yeah.
Yeah, that ended up, I think, being another big boost in confidence for Bitcoin.